We Stand podcast. In this podcast, we cover topics relating to childhood sexual abuse. It contains subjects that some listeners may find upsetting.
Welcome back to the We Stand podcast. It has been a while. Hi, Orla.
Hello, Kate.
I love the way we're pretending like we haven't been talking for half an hour already.
We're so good at this.
Oh yeah, so professional. Mm-hmm. So we've taken it. It's not that we took a break, so to speak, but there's been a long gap since we've published the last podcast. And in the interim, we've gone from level 3 to level 5. I guess there's been a lot going on in terms of, for me, for the series, and that sometimes when recording or getting it ready, parts of me want to disappear a little bit. So you've been very generous and gentle with me around that. But also there's been life stuff like jobs and work, and the same for you, you know. We are blown away, I think, with the amount of people that are really interested and yelling at us for the next episode. Because I don't know about you, are you getting that?
Yeah, no, it's really funny. Like my girlfriend said to me the other day, she said, yeah, listen, I know that you're busy and stuff like, but the girls were on to me. And when's the next episode out? okay, go away.
Yeah, I've been getting that. I've been getting that from people I don't know, which is, you know, really like, oh my God, other people that we don't know are listening. Wow. So in the last time that we recorded was with my aunt, and we'll come to her in a second. But firstly, we're recording today on Tuesday, and the podcast is being published today. So yesterday, we had an article in the Irish Independent in the Health and Living section, which the editor, Yvonne, asked me to write based on listening to this podcast. And it took me a while to write it, but it was a real privilege to be able to write it. And it's getting a good reaction online and people really hearing what we have to say, isn't it right?
Yeah, and I suppose for me, Kate, with you, it's like when we got the letter from Jenny, there was a massive difference to me listening to you read the letter out loud. And for me reading the letter, and I suppose I wanted to just touch base with you about that. Like, what was it like? I mean, I know you, when you wrote the article, you would have reread it a few times, but to actually see it in print, was that different for you this time as well?
It was, yeah. And it was different because while I can write something out and, you know, Yvonne was brilliant editing, and I have to say, Kira, my partner, was great with editing me as well. And I know I sent it on to you going, what do you think of this? Does this make any sense? Like, I don't know where that accent came from, but like, seeing it in print and also seeing the photos were quite big. Seeing it in print though, and like having friends and family contact me before I'd even woken up was, it was a bit nerve-wracking, because it's only when you realize that other people are literally seeing it do you look at the words you've said and read them in a different context.
Yeah.
Like, it's my story, so I'm used to it. And I feel like it can be quite waffly at times. And I was hoping that it wasn't too waffly. But I didn't think, like, it was also nice to rein me in, to be succinct enough to get across that we do need to change how we speak about people who are surviving abuse.
And I suppose that was for a lot of the feedback that I was getting from people, too, was that they'd never thought of it that way. They'd never... Yeah. You know, when they use words towards victims, survivors, that, you know, they think they're being helpful and they think they're going, oh my God, like, you're so brave. I don't know how you survive that. I don't know how you get up in the morning. They're literally saying this because this is where they're coming from. They don't think they could get up in the morning. They don't know how they would survive this. Mm. They wouldn't be brave enough to put themselves into your shoes. So I think that's very powerful in itself, that you're getting that message out there, Kate, that just choose your words carefully and listen a bit more. We all need to listen. It's not a topic that, you know, anytime I talk to anybody about our podcast, and I say to the older generation, you know, it's not for everybody. I'm like going, actually, shut the fuck up, Orla. You've got to stop that narrative. If people are adults and if they're uncomfortable or they're not, they don't want to be there, they can turn the off button on. Yeah. Ironically, they can turn the off button on. I make sense sometimes, but not all of the time.
Yeah, no, the same. It's a good thing we're together because one of us will make sense when the other doesn't. I agree. Like, I know, and I said in the article that people mean well. It's all meaning well. It's a level of, first of all, it's a very uncomfortable topic for people. So I found myself before, like, now this is not it for everybody, but we do it really gently and we're being soft and gentle. And it's like, it's just the same as plumossing and coaxing people into something, because none of us are able to sit with what's uncomfortable. And the truth is, it is uncomfortable. And the truth is, we're talking about childhood sexual abuse. We're talking about coercive control. We're talking about emotional abuse. We're talking about lifelong patterns that we have the power to break and change. And I guess that's, again, coming back to why I wrote the article, why we're doing the podcast, why I keep opening my mouth. If we work ourselves backwards, if we think about who we are at the end of our lives, and if we haven't been able to break the cycle, then we have spent our entire lives being controlled by it. And in order to break the cycle, we need people who have not been abused to help us do that by allowing us a world where we're totally fine. We've dealt with stuff, we're dealing with stuff, and we understand the language around that. It's stand with people and catch them, and don't commiserate with them in a pitiful way. You know, even though you might mean well, if that's where you're coming from, that I understand it's about meaning well, but like, maybe stop yourself and think for a minute and think, what can you do to empower that person? And that's where we all need to be coming from.
Bravo. Nearly as good as your article. That's really brilliant. That's excellent. And I suppose our immediate audience for this podcast, you know, podcasts can travel all over the world, but our immediate audience for this podcast is in Ireland. And there isn't a person in Ireland that can't throw a stone without touching somebody who has been abused in some way in their childhood. Yeah. It's a part of our culture, unfortunately, and people don't want to acknowledge that. And people don't. We want to talk about our amazing storytellers and our amazing warriors and our amazing musicians and our amazing dancers. But we don't want to talk about this part of our narrative, of our Irish narrative, that was protected so vigorously throughout the years and allowed to progress and get very, very powerful. And we all have to stand up now and listen and take it on board and accept it. And if we do not do that, we will never move on from it.
Yep, exactly. You know, it festered, it became powerful. It is no longer powerful, except for in our language.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's not to take away from someone who's in the middle of dealing with it right now. You know, I mean, as a collective, in terms of turn the tables, the power belongs with us, you know, not with the person who's abusing.
But the thing is, Kate, like, throughout this, I have gone from our original chat to, yeah, excuse me, you know, I'll do this with Kate, I'll help her do it, but, you know, I'm not going to talk about it, and, you know, it's got nothing to do with me, it's like, you know, I'm running a country mile from it, and I have evolved so much just having conversations with you, and the amount of conversations it's opened up with. Like, I had an aunt and I was having a conversation with her and she said, you know, everybody says that happened back in the day. It never happened back in our day. You know, I didn't know anybody that, you know, was abused or anything like that. Now, there was, in where we went to school, we weren't allowed to go into fifth and sixth class by mammy and daddy, because the principal there, if he got a liking to you, you were in trouble. So we were all moved away from fifth and sixth class. But other than that, no, I don't know. And I'm like, oh, sweet mother of God. You're basically telling me that both your parents knew that this man was fiddling with girls in fifth and sixth class, and they take you out at fourth class and move you to a school an hour further away. You know?
Yeah, I know, but that's the notion of it. It's because it's that two steps removed, and therefore it doesn't really happen. It's like the same as looking at newspapers and seeing tragic cases or, you know, young people dying or whatever. You're like, it happens to other people, but it doesn't happen to me. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's the happening to other people thing.
Isn't that so funny? Because you hear that narrative constantly on RTE news when RTV3 or whatever news station are reporting a murder or a burglary. That sort of thing doesn't happen here.
Yeah. Or you see, the person being interviewed, exactly that. Like, this is a great neighborhood. This kind of thing would never happen. And you're like, again, that person means well. They think, oh my God, how did this end up on my doorstep? But that's the point with abuse. Abuse happens inside your own home. It's a great house with like so many nice things happening and so many child-friendly activities. But yes, there is abuse happening within it. It's such a hard thing to comprehend because, look, who wants to go around every single day suspecting things? You don't. And I think we'd all go a bit mental, and I think we, you know, wouldn't be healthy for anyone to do that. But the reality is, it's not outside your front door. It's sometimes in your front door, you know? And speaking of, a couple of weeks ago, my aunt Thecla came on the program and recorded with us. And we recorded through Zoom because, again, level 3, level 5, etc., across 3 counties. So the volume and sound we're not able to meet up to record at the moment. So our volume isn't as good as we would like it to be, our audio quality. But Thecla, she's the youngest of my aunts and uncles on my dad's side, on my paternal side. And so therefore, my grandfather, who abused me, is her dad. And it was hugely important. I'm so appreciative for her coming on and talking to us. Because, again, it's the same thing. It's about having everyone's voice or loads of people's voices heard in what happens and how that impacted them. And I wanted to know what it must be like for her to, number one, she's been disowned or not part of that family for a very long time. But number two, the root of it is he was her dad. And how does that land? How do you carry that? And her mom, how do we deal with that? So Orla and myself had a big chat with her, and we're splitting that into two parts because it's quite heavy at times. So Orla, will we just kick straight into that one, and we'll be back to you in a little while.
Yeah. I suppose, Tetla, thanks a million for doing this, having the chat with us, and it's fantastic that you've agreed to come on. So you are, we've spoken a lot about Kate and her granddad and the relationship that they had or what went on for them, and Kate's granddad is your dad, and he's passed away some years ago. So I suppose I'll just start off, Tetla, with what was your childhood like? You were the baby of 6.
I was the youngest of 6. They were steps of stairs, a year between them, more or less. And I was 5 years behind them. My childhood, I had this conversation with my husband recently. My childhood, I always said, was a perfect, happy childhood because I was told it was. And I was indoctrinated and believed it. When I look back on my childhood, it was so weird. And it's taking me till now to try piece it together as an adult. Yeah, but because I was 5 years behind, I sort of broke free from them at an earlier stage. So my time with my friends in Dunmore East and, you know, then later my school friends and hitching around Ireland and cycling around Ireland, but we hitched. it was terrific fun.
Kate was the first grandchild in the house, is that correct?
Correct.
So that must have been a big deal for all of you, your first time becoming an auntie.
Oh, I remember when Mary came down and she stood at the fireplace and announced she was pregnant. It was like, magic, absolutely, yeah, fantastic. A whole new world, you know, because as I say, I was the youngest of the 6 of them. It was an all adult scenario. So to have a baby arrive was just amazing.
And like you were a kid kind of yourself. You were only a teenager then, weren't Do you?
I was, yeah. Numbers and time mean very little to me. So I actually don't know what age I was. I suppose I was probably around 12 when your parents met.
Yeah, that's what my mum says, that you were only about 12, 13, yeah.
Yeah, and back then, my God, was an innocent, naive times, you know, a very different world to now. Dara, my late brother, had left home. He was the one I was closest to. So I was, in ways, at that stage, when I was 12, I was an only child, you know, because they were all gone. So I had a very separate rearing to the rest of them.
And how long was it that you were, we'll say, in the house on your own, like as the baba?
I'd say by the time I was 12, being home alone, because all of the siblings had left early. My eldest sister would have been the first to leave. Then I think my brother, like I was very young when they went.
So what are your earliest memories of Kate?
One of my brothers died. So he was killed in an accident and we were very, very close. So a lot of my memories are blocked from back then. But my earliest memories would be I had come home from Saint-Tropez. I was an au pair. And of course, I was pregnant. And I moved in with the family in Dublin. And Kate at that stage was 2. And just the most amazing little toddler. She loved to put talcum powder on my big fat belly.
Because you say moving in with the family, Thekla, like you mean moving in with my mum and dad, so with your big brother and me, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And Abby.
Yeah,
the dog. Yeah, I would have stayed there for a while. And when I told my father, your grandfather, that I was pregnant, his reply to me was, it's people like you do whores out of business.
Oh, my God. What was your relationship with granny and granddad like? There was normal stuff as well, do you know what I mean? But like, what was it like? Because for you, there's a lot of loss going on, do you know?
I didn't have a relationship with him. I know as a kid, I mean, the standing joke was he was a fluent Irish speaker, and his gold fonia that he used to wear had my teeth marks in it. Because, I mean, I used to pull out of his hair. So for all of that time as a kid, we didn't have a relationship. Then there would have been times sort of when I was 13, 14, 15, I quizzed him in how he behaved around girls and women. And he went absolutely ballistic. So again, then there was no relationship. Well, there was a time, there was a friend of mine had been to the cinema sneakily, you know, that she'd seen Mandingo, which was a film with nudity in it. And it was like, oh my God. And she said, I saw your father come in the back. So I challenged him on it. So he said he was repairing false teeth for the lady that had worked at the cinema. And she told him, oh, I insisted to go in and look at one of the films. And he just happened to go into that one. There was a lead of things. I remember time in his workshop, I had found a big stack of dirty magazines, which he blamed on being my brothers when I challenged him on it. So there was things I challenged, and then I just realized, just don't go there and steer clear.
I remember you said to me that you said that your friends kind of stopped coming over to visit in your house.
They never did come over. And when you know, I remember being terribly lonely, you know, they used to all go into Waterford on the bus and have coffee at that weekends. And I was never allowed to be part of that.
Okay.
But then any time that my best friend was over, I couldn't put my finger on it. Just the behavior was inappropriate, you know. You know, so there was always an oddness there.
Thekla, do you recall at what stage, or was there ever any stage that you saw your dad with Kate and thought something isn't right here?
Only as she's mentioned previously at christening of my youngest son. And we were it was at the christening, everybody was sitting down. We lived in quite a small house at the time, and everybody was sort of snuggled in on this corner sofa. And I was talking with my sister-in-law, my husband's sister. My own sister had said to me, isn't it great to see Dad and Kate get on so well together? And I looked over and I thought, that doesn't look right. So I said to my sister-in-law, have a look at that. Tell me what you think. And she said, that doesn't look right. My father had his hand on Kate's thigh, but it was right up the top, you know, sort of touching off the groin. I thought, that's just not right. But then either Killian fell in the back garden or, you know, it was, and the moment was gone.
Where were you, or do you recall, when you found out that Kate had disclosed to her mum that something was going on?
Her father told me. He came to the house to tell me.
Did he?
Yeah, he came to the house and...
I'm like, wow, okay.
Something to tell you. Kate has said that dad is abusing her. And of course, typical me, my brain is always ahead and I go, I knew it. And then started to relay what I thought. And the fact that, God, he was always so touchy-feely with your mother. You know, she couldn't go near him and he was grabbing her boobs.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I did challenge him on that as well years previous. And it was like, just it wasn't worth going there. You didn't get a rational answer. You just got anger from him, you know. And that was the only time he ever displayed anger toward me. Yeah, so he said it to me and I said, you know, I'm not surprised. He didn't react.
Why was my dad telling you, like, what? So he went down to tell you, which, like, because the thing is, so far we've, you know, found out that, like, he didn't reply to any of the, you know, assessments that were sent or anything like that. You know, he avoided it for a year. He certainly wouldn't talk to me about it. Well, as in, I wouldn't talk to him either. But, like, there was no support or evidence of support from him. So, like, was he telling you because he was trying to say that it didn't happen, or is he just telling you to be straight up about it?
He was telling me to notify me. He had lived with me just prior to that.
Yeah, like what did he say? And then how did it... So you said you knew, but like what was he saying?
Just all I remember is him saying that you had accused dad of abusing you. Mm. I said, I'm not surprised. And he went, oh, you know, you're not surprised. I said, no, I'm not surprised. But he didn't go into any detail. He didn't have any detail.
Was he angry or was he...
No.
Was he blaming my mom at that point? Or was there any... Just that's it. It was just to tell you.
I mean, at that stage, the main reason he would have been in contact with me was telling me how evil your mother was and painting dreadful pictures. And so then as soon as I did side with you... And taking sides is... That's the wrong word. It had nothing to do with taking sides. It had to do with being compassionate to the people who were hurt, you know, that I related with. But I was warned that if I was to call to the house and to have anything to do with any of you, I would be then deemed to be the enemy.
Yeah, and I remember that because I remember that, you know, your character was sort of called into question a lot. And you know, like, you know, it was like you either are in that family or you're out. And, you know, like the thing that my recollection always was that I think you and my mom were really close. And I think like she came into your life when you were a little girl, really. And, you know, I can imagine, like, I know my mom and I know how glam she was. And I can imagine that it must have been kind
her
of
nails.
Yeah. You know, I just imagine it must have been lovely to have my mom come into your life when you're a kid, because she's such a big, generous person, and it's like, and she's glam and all the other stuff, but like also for you to have someone that she would have been very bubbly and friendly, and you know, that would have been different. I think I know that, like, my dad's our family are talk a lot, but like my mom's very bubbly, and like that must have been lovely. But also then when you get to, you know, them separating and the issues around the, you know, like separating is a hard thing for people and dismantling what is a family situation, but it's even more complicated then when you've got the family history and then you've got me coming out and saying I've been abused for most of my childhood. So like I don't think you ever sided. I think you just took what was natural, that your sons were hanging out with us and we were all close. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's so sad for you that you've carried the weight of standing in integrity an awful lot in comparison to the rest of your family, you know, to the rest of your close family.
Remember when my father died, after all was said and done, he was my father, and I went to the funeral to pay respect and I was disowned by the family completely. But thankfully, they had a lovely priest who held on. He knew I had two small kids at home. And even though my dad was being buried from a locality which actually none of us belonged to, but for some strange reason they had his funeral there. So when I arrived, I was like, I jumped out, but the priest was waiting for me on the steps and brought me in and walked me up the aisle and sat me in a pew on my own. Just so thoughtful. So when it came to the sign of peace, they all completely ignored me.
Is that the last time you've seen your mum and your siblings?
The last time I physically saw my mother and sister, believe it or not, was in the RDS at one of these shows. And I had my own two boys with me, and they would have been, I suppose they would have been about 9 and 10 or 10 or 11. And of course I stopped and went, oh, there's my mother. So of course my youngest went, ah, oh, and he hairs off. So he follows her around and then he comes back over and he said to me, I just wanted to hear what she sounded like. Mm. I just thought it was so sad, you know?
Tekla, I know this is hard and I want you to feel really, just to say anything, like you're not going to hurt me just in case you're worried about any of that stuff. You know, like I just, you know, it's so hard, or I think it must be hard to be able to reconstruct the entire person that was your dad, as in he was your dad, you had a relationship with him, and then he did something really, we know with me, he did something unforgivable in so many ways. Do you know what I mean? And how is that for you as his daughter?
I think I said to you when I texted you, this is awful and I don't mean to hurt. Mm. To me, listening to the podcast was like somebody reviewing a book I had read. When it comes to my family, I am utterly detached. I find it impossible to feel emotion. If I was to start talking about my grandchildren and my sons and my daughters-in-law now, I'd be in tears in a second. But I can talk about situations with my family and I'm completely detached. For me, I'm very analytical. So I was trying to analyze why did my father behave that way? You know, because there was a nice side of him. I didn't really know him as a person, but I do know from going camp, we had an active childhood, that if that hadn't been going on, it would have been terrific. So why was he that way?
Wow, like what is it like for you hearing that back?
Do you know what? It's kind of funny because we're going to go into the next part now really quickly, but like it's kind of gorgeous to be able to talk to Tekla and to remember to keep putting myself out of the way, remember to keep giving her the space to tell her story, which is really difficult because I talk a lot and it's so intertwined with mine, you know? There are parts coming up in a second, which listening back to and editing really set me off. I was setting myself off. And I think that that is something to mention to our listeners, because it's the compartmentalization of how we deal with things. And what's setting me off is I feel today like I was too generous about trying to be fully understanding and build my grandfather is a whole entire human. Today, I don't want him to be a whole entire human. I just want him to be the fucker that abused me. And so today I am like, oh, why was I so generous? In that's how I feel about myself. And yet it's vitally important. The next bit is vitally important because it is important that we remember that there are whole people. This isn't a reason of why they abused. This does not mean that he was not a monster at times to me. This does not mean that he is someone I just think he's a gross human. But what I have to look at is I did have some good memories. And I'm not going to throw those away because they are real. And if I throw them away, every time they pop back up, it's like I cut myself again with them. And I don't want to be self-harming. Instead, if I accept, yeah, I had good times and I had, you know, fond memories of times, then it takes away the power of it to hurt me. I hope that makes sense. Does that make sense?
It really does, Kate. And it's such a brave thing to be able to, and I know you hate that brave, oh, you're so brave, Kate. But it is such a really, really powerful thing to be able to say out loud. And I mean, if we go back to the pilot episode where you refer to him as your grandfather and you say, you know the way I say it, grandfather, not granddad. And I say, well, I'd like to call him, and I mention a load of profanities. that's really not being respectful, me being respectful of your story. I really am beginning to understand, as somebody outside looking in, how you can have this, I loved this man. We had a great relationship. He taught me how to play chess. I despise this man. I hate this man. He was a monster. Mm. And that Jekyll and Hyde that is in people, and unless we give people the space to say that, it's like giving your mum the space to say, how did I not know? There's no answer to that question. She just needs to leave that out there and say those words.
Yeah.
And I think that correlates with what you're going through, and especially today, where you want him, that he is the monster that he was, but other, when you were speaking, and it was your truth at that moment when you were speaking to Tekla, that yeah, he was this other person.
Mm-hmm. It was, and it's like, there's also the thing where he's Tekla's dad, and my grandmother's Tekla's mum, and there's my aunt is a very kind woman, and she's very outspoken, and I think incredibly generous. If you're talking generosity, I think incredible to have come on this podcast with us, you know, to put herself out there again and be really raw and honest. So I suppose it kind of helps to the story when we two people come together and talk about these other people. It makes them more human, you know. I suppose with that, we should go into it now. Just to warn you, there are elements of the next section that obviously we're talking about childhood sexual abuse, but there are elements that might be uncomfortable for people. And as you know, at the start and the beginning of each episode, we have the numbers and websites that you can dial if you feel that you need to reach out. But yes, let's go into the second part now.
Can I just translate for Kate there? The start and the beginning mean the start and the end.
Did I say that?
Yeah, at the start and beginning.
Okay, well, there we go.
roll it there, Kate.
First of all, Tekla, you're talking about being so detached, and I think that's, you know, it's your body's way and your brain's way of surviving, but also now it's just the way it is, isn't it? And then you were then talking about how you had done some research into granddad and into his family and into his past. And, you know, you reckoned that there was probably some horrible stuff happened to him, which would make sense. Usually if someone has abused, it is because they're dealt with a trauma in their past, or they haven't, you know, that's what they've experienced. So like, I've tried to compassionately look at things, and from a healing perspective, I've definitely tried to understand and rehumanize my grandfather for me, and rehumanize my father for me as well, you know? And then because ultimately at the end of the day, it's not some person with just one facet to their life. He had lots of other things going on in his life, and I'm sure people loved him. I know people loved him, and I know that I enjoyed parts of my childhood with him. And as somebody who survived the abuse, and it's not just the sexual abuse, but the manipulation, like, it took an awful lot to honor the fact that, no, there were times that I did enjoy his company. And like, that as a survivor is a very difficult thing to talk about, because people go, oh, but how can you do that? But you're, you know, they can't marry the two things. And it's like, well, no, he taught me how to play chess. Yes, that means every time I play chess, I think about my grandfather, which then brings up other shit. But it's still I enjoyed learning how to play chess. I enjoyed him showing me things in the garden. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, a lot of that for years used to make me feel like there was something broken inside me, that how can I still have a nice memory as well as all the awful stuff? Do you know? But I wasn't brought up by him. So from you and detaching, it makes sense that you'd analyze and have a think and see what kind of a person he was and what caused him to behave in the way that he behaved. But like, what else did you find out?
He, as I say, he lived in a tenement in Dublin. They would have had serious, serious poverty as a child. I know whenever I was a kid, I went, oh, I'm starving. He literally lost it, and not so much being angry at me, but just, my God, you don't understand what it's like to be starving. And he used to relate a story of, you know, being locked up for stealing bread. And it's only now I'm putting two and two together. I'm wondering, is that the past? I mean, I or like the oddest of childhood insofar as we all had a colour. So we all had our own cutlery and plates, towel, face cloth. All our underwear was stitched with the embroidery of our colour. I was white, which really annoyed me because everybody else had pretty colours. It was pink, yellow, red, green and blue. But I was white. So we were so regimented in ways. And that would have come from my mother's side, you know. So I don't know. I question so many things, but I haven't the answers. You know, because I have no contact with my family, I have no way of asking these questions. Yeah. And of course, it's only after my father died that you start to think of all these questions. Oh, I wonder, is that tied to that or whatever, you know?
And like, you know, the way you've listened to the podcast, and I would have told you before, but like, Granny knew that I was being abused.
Yeah.
Like, how is that for you to hear that?
That stunned me. The what was the expression you used? She was a paedophile enabler, something like that you said in one of the podcasts.
Mm.
And that actually blew me away because I haven't thought of it that way.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know. I haven't got to thinking of that side of it. Because I had believed she didn't know, but now the realization that she did, again, I'll start being analytical. Why did she behave that way? Mm. I mean, I know a bit about her childhood, and it was absolutely, you know, tragic for her. Her father died when she was 7. And she'd been in an isolation hospital. They thought she'd scarlet fever. And she adored her daddy, and she came out from the hospital, and he was gone. And life had changed utterly. They lived in England at the time. And she came home to Ireland to live in a one-up, one-down with her aunts, slept at the end of the bed, never had anything belong to her after that. So, I mean, she had her issues.
There's something so fascinating about starting to look at the earlier part of people's lives. And, like, you know, I remember asking Granny as a kid, how did you and Granddad meet? And I don't remember the full story, but it was something about being in a hostel, and I think Granddad had seen her or something like that. And then, you know, there's this joke about they were going cycling, and it sounded like he was very persistent. And obviously he was a good bit older than her as well. I can't remember how much older than her he was.
Ten,
do you?
10 years.
10 years.
10 years.
Yeah. And like, I just remember hearing, like, cause she used to call him Binky because they would cycle and she would say, keep in, keep in, keep in all the time. And it turned into Binky or whatever. And I remember all those stories. And then they were a couple that were very much a couple, but at the same time, they were a couple that she did turn a blind eye, or she did, like, it's my conversation with her when I went to see her in the nursing home. Was very much, there was realization of flashes of truth in her eyes when she looked at me. And I knew not to push it because I didn't want to cut. I think there's enough hurt she would carry. I think, like, yes, it's despicable that she didn't fucking stop it. But at the same time, it's also a horrendous position to be in. You're like, but I love this person, and maybe that isn't what happened. And I don't know. Maybe I'm trying to justify it. When I saw her in the nursing home, I didn't want to press it in an angry way. I just needed to say to her, this happened, and I know you saw it and you were there. And I just needed to have that with her. And she she first of all was saying, like, well, in those days we didn't really understand what that was, and we just thought you were very close to your grandfather. But then there was more, and I pushed her a little bit more on it, and I just saw flashes of a woman who has spent an awful lot of her life surviving, you know, and being cold and not necessarily being nurturing, but definitely surviving. And if they were together, and as you say, she had had her father taken away from her, and then she'd had this childhood that wasn't ideal. The two of them probably needed to just have a solid base together, regardless.
Or did he see the
vulnerability?
You know, and, yes, yeah. And you know, take her under his wing. And then she was stuck, you know, because they had moved away, and she had to make the best of the life she had. Again, I don't know. I admire you for approaching her and talking to her. I wouldn't do it.
When you speak there earlier, and you said that, you know, about the colour coordination that you guys had, and that it was very regimental, and you said that came from my mother's side.
Yeah.
Why do you think that, or what's your thought behind that?
I actually haven't analysed why she would have been like that, but I would say it was a matter of owning things, because when she moved back to Ireland, to coming from a, you know, a really, really happy home, to having nothing, and nothing of her own, and nothing belonged to her. She didn't even have her own bed. And I mean, she grew up like that, sleeping at the foot of her grandmother's bed. Her mother then disappeared for a year or more. She only found out much later in life that she had a sister. Her mother ran off with her aunt's fiance. She had a troubled childhood where she owned nothing. So I think it was important to her that we all owned our own thing. There was a big antique sideboard in every room. We all had our own cupboard, and it was our toy cupboard. And you daren't go to anybody else's toy cupboard. So, like, there's no sharing between any of us. Now, don't forget, I'm 5 years behind the rest of them. So I didn't have this group family thing that they would have had. But we all had our own cupboard, our own cutlery, you know, everything that you had belonged to you, and nobody else should touch it. So I reckon, only now that you've asked me the question, I reckon that idiosyncrasy comes from her not owning anything.
And, like, because a lot of the time we get, since putting out the podcast, you know, we get people messaging going, I can't believe your grandmother knew this, and I can't believe what you're saying. Or some people saying that they're yelling at the podcast while it's happening, while they're listening. Do you know what I mean? But it's like, I suppose people just, it's the same as some people can't believe that my mum let me go to Waterford after I told that I had been abused. But, like, it's not my mum's fault either. You're just in the moment trying to survive.
Absolutely. But you see, through all of this, and if you listen back to the podcasts as a different person, you had a father. You went to Waterford with your father. You know, it's not on your mum's door. It's him. Why didn't he look after you?
Yeah.
You know, you were going to his family's home. Why didn't he watch out for you? Why is he not aware of where his daughter is or what's happening to her? You know, the psychological abuse I think you have suffered. You mentioned your communion. I'd love to hear more about that. But you were sent upstairs on your communion day. My husband saw an encounter between your father and your grandfather.
Yeah.
On the landing. And to this day, he's wondering what went on.
Like, yeah, because that's one of those where, like, I remember my communion being very definitely the place of putting on this smile, because everybody else is there, and definitely remember Dad going mental at me. But, like, Granddad abused me in my room that day, and he never ever, like, that never happened. Abuse happened with Granddad in Waterford. It didn't happen in my parents' house. Do you know what I mean? So it was a really different occurrence, which is why it's in my head, because most of the abuse that I remember is when there's other people around, whereas this happened, you know, he came into my room, and I think he came into my room because I was upset because I'd been given out to for getting coal on, but I'm not sure. I remember showing, like, I had loads of teddies, and I remember showing, I was showing him my teddies, trying to distract him, but also distract myself. But then as I continued showing him the teddies as he abused me, so that, you know, I've kind of not really said that out loud before, but it's, I just continued showing him the teddies as he abused me, because, well, I was in here doing this. So I don't, the memory of that is very clear, but the before and after is not. Do you know? So I don't know what happened there. Yeah.
Your grandfather was given the perfect excuse to head upstairs into the room, you know. You probably were so embarrassed. You know, your communion day in your beautiful dress, and he just, your father just went mad at you, roaring and screaming, and you know, the way he did, you know.
I think that a lot of people who've been abused, whether, again, I always keep going back to whether it's sexually, psychologically, emotionally, some people don't have a clue that they are actually being abused. Do you know what I mean? Like, emotional abuse has only just really been registering with people as something that is like you can go to court for it. Do you know what I mean? Coercion, etc. But I think there is a big fear. I know there is. I can only speak for me. There's a massive fear that I carry that temper, that I carry the bits that broke them with me, that I carry those broken parts. I have a temper, and I very rarely lose it, but I have to remember it's okay that you're a human and you can lose it and get angry once you clear up or clean up after yourself. But, like, you know, apologize, obviously, but like
not clear the broken dishes off the
door. Exactly. Like, oh, I broke the windows again. But, like, no, I mean, you have to laugh at that stuff, but you also have to, like, I think some days, the good days, I'm like, yeah, I'm a human and I have genetic things that I'm predisposed to, and I have psychological stuff that's happened to me, and an identity that I that is mine, and, you know, I've picked apart myself a lot to heal and to get rid of the bits that are definitely stuff that trigger me. Like, my temper would trigger me. When I get cross, it triggers me, and it triggers me because I don't want to be carrying the bits that are the broken parts of somebody else. And it brings it back to, you know, generations and generational abuse, but also carrying stories through your DNA. And, like, you, you're my aunt, you're my dad's sister, and it's like, even if you did have a different childhood to them, you're still carrying the stuff that went on, or just a way of behaving in the world that, you know, you now realize that wasn't actually the way other people are. Do you know,
questioning myself all the time, because I didn't, though it wasn't normality. So what your foundations, my foundations, you realize, oh my God, that's not normal. So you're all the time questioning. But when you're mentioning, you know, nature, nurture, I see it in my grandchildren now. You know, I see how my own children behave. And now my grandchildren. So you see what parts are nature.
Yeah.
What you find through, you know, that's, you know, like so-and-so or whatever. But the nurture, you know, thankfully, the more the dilute that comes in, my two fabulous daughters-in-law, you know, what they're bringing to the party, you know, to rearing their children. Again, thank God, it's another generation further away from it. And to see those children growing up normal. That I only actually said to my husband today, to hear them laugh, and it's a genuine laugh, where I remember laughing as a child, I mean, ha, 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 you know, I've just sounded like I've had a great laugh, but no, I haven't. But I don't know how to do that, because, you know, I remember thinking back, or the Groucho Marx films, my, your grandfather and my sister used to sit and watch the Groucho Marx films, and they would be absolutely a bit laughing, tears rolling down their face. And I didn't know what that felt like. You know, it was like I had suffered depression all of my childhood and only started to come into my own when I was about 27 and become a human being that actually felt things. You know, it's just very peculiar, very hard to describe, you know.
Yeah, but I really, really understand. And I think there will be people listening to this that will really understand. And I think as well, you give a voice to, like my mum giving a voice to the mums, and your mum as well, but to mums who are dealing with their child saying something that is the worst nightmare. You're dealing with being somebody whose dad was that, and you're a mum, and you're healing from your own stuff, do you know? Yeah.
The one thing I wouldn't tolerate is silence. I've called it out the whole way. He was guilty. His shame. And it's not our fault. I'm still proud of who I am and where I came from. Because I'm a result of that, and it's led me to be more compassionate, to actually stop and listen and care and empathize. Things that I couldn't do when I was young, I didn't know why, but now I can, and unfortunately this horrible, horrible things happen in life, but it's how you then deal with them and the humanity of it, and just being there for somebody,
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't think there's much more to say about on top of that. That's it. Mm.
I'm just it's so beautiful. It you just surmised it so well there and so naturally. And it's just so lovely to have sat and listened to the two of you go, as blood relations and of people with the same different experience but the same background. It's amazing to have listened to you both and hear. It's so fucking complicated, this whole thing. It's such a can of worms, and it's just people might be blue in the face listening to this, but each time we have somebody on or we get to speak to somebody or we read a letter, there's a whole new layer of an onion is peeled away, and it's another point of view from somebody else. I love what you said there, Tekla, when Kate was talking about, people don't understand why my mum let me off in the car, and you're like, hold on a minute, your dad was there. What the hell did he do? Why did he bring you down the car? Why did he bring you back there? And all of a sudden I went, oh my God, we're so quick to blame the mum or the woman. And exactly. it's incredible just to,
to be. For me, it's been like this conversation. I feel like I could keep going and talking, but I just love how what you said there is perfect. And it's exactly what this podcast is about. It is that thing of being proud of where you've come from, but recognizing and speaking out. And that's what I have done all my life too, And I think you and me are very similar. Anytime I hang out with you, the more I'm like, oh yeah, I just think we're really similar. But it's definitely that thing of just, no, it's not okay. And when you say it's not okay, you end up standing on your own an awful lot, and you're the one, put your head above the parapet, you're the one that the needle, you're standing out. And that's why this podcast is We Stand, because there are so many people standing, you just can't see each other, and
you need to be emotionally strong to stand, and that's the hardest thing to do when you've been hurt. So to stand together, and the more people now join this, and silence has to end, people have to talk, that there has to be a way forward. They have to grow,
Absolutely. And in doing so, we stop the cycle.
This podcast is your story. And that's why I just wanted to back up the questions that you ask me. I didn't want to have an agenda. And I hope you realize that I've just answered, and I hope I haven't rambled, because I just want to fill in your pieces of the jigsaw. To help you build your jigsaw and your platform,
Oh no, it's been amazing. And like you you definitely are going to make a difference to people who will hear this, you know.
I hope so. It's the one person that I want to help is you.
Thank you.
You know, you are my adored niece.
Thank you. You're gonna make me cry now.
Oh my God, I just wanna fucking hug my computer. What are you two people doing to me, like?
Yeah.
I think we called for a do-do-do-do. Well, there you go, Kate. I think that Tetla surmised it very well there towards the end about, you know, that the silence has to end. People have to talk. They have to grow. You know, you're doing your bit. You're growing. You're, as a human being, you're coming through this and you're outing yourself and outing your story. And it's time for the rest of us to stop going, no, this is uncomfortable, I don't want to listen. You know, we just have to mature and learn from this.
Actually, do you know what? That's funny that you said that exactly like that. It's like the rest of us, you know, have to just, what did you say? To listen, to just grow up and listen.
Yeah.
Listen, rather than I don't want to listen to this, because I suppose so much of me putting myself out there and other people putting themselves out there, you do get like, all you get is the thoughts in your head of going, people going, oh, here she goes banging on about this shit again, you know? And it's like, yeah, I know, I'm banging the same drum. Will you ever listen?
Yeah. As always, guys, thanks a million for listening. Please share. Don't forget about our GoFundMe page, and please get in touch through Instagram or our Gmail account, which is westandpodcast@gmail.com.
And the GoFundMe is westandpodcastgofundme, which would be brilliant. Thank you so much.
If you have been affected by any of the content in this series, please contact services in your own country. For supports in Ireland, please contact Cara Adult Services on 1890 92 45 67. If you have concerns about the welfare of a child, please contact Tusla on www.tusla.ie/children-first.